This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
In the 1960s, Yale College, like many of the region's top universities, saw its first significant presence of black students on campus.
Take the class of 1970. Of the 1,000 students, 32 were black men. Very much still a minority, but these were accomplished young men who'd overcome all manner of obstacles to get to Yale. They went on to be lawyers who argued before the Supreme Court, doctors at major medical institutions, journalists who covered the world.
So they've been successful, but at great cost, because something is happening to these men that's not happening, at least not as much, to their white classmates. It's called John Henryism. We'll find out what that is in just a moment, but because it's today's talker, health, well-being, and the steep price of success for African-American men. Joining us now is Ron Howell. He's a professor of journalism at Brooklyn College and a member of the Yale class of 1970. He's written about his classmates in Yale Alumni Magazine in an article entitled Before Their Time. Ron Howell, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much, Meghna. Pleased to be here.
Well, if you could, in a word, tell us what is happening to your fellow black male classmates.
Well, many of us believe that they're dying way too quickly before their time, as the headline on the article said. This is something that had been a concern of many of us, believe it or not, going back 10 or even 15 years. I had an encounter with the death of a fellow Yalie months really after graduating, and it had a great impact on me. I knew that the young man had spent some time in the hospital, and I also knew that he was going through some crises. But it was something that I was able to cope with. I spoke at his funeral and got to know his parents and eventually moved on.
Mm-hmm.
But it seemed also that within the next 20 years, this death started sneaking up on us, and many of us felt that it was way before their time. I think the one that hit home in so many ways was Glenn Deschabir back in 1994, as I recall.
Well,
and I think
Ron,
Glenn,
I'm
because
so,
he was...
I'm
yes.
so sorry to interrupt, but well, I just want to be clear so that listeners understand. When you say that it's, that it's cutting down these men before their time, you've actually taken a look at the numbers regarding your class, the class of 1970 at Yale, and you found that black men are dying at three times the rate of their white classmates, and we're not, we're talking about men in their 60s. They're not in their 70s, 80s,
right,
or 90s.
Right.
They're
right.
Healthy, well, more should be healthy men in the prime of their lives.
That's right. That's right. And some, of course, had been leaving us in their 40s and 50s. It hit home to me a year ago. A year ago, by the way, was the 40th anniversary of our graduation. From Yale. We graduated. We were the class of 70, as you said. And I went to the reunion, had a wonderful time there. We danced to the music of Plastic Visitation, and the group that played together then and was well known through the Northeast was there at the reunion and played. And outside in the area where folks were coming in and signing up, there was a computer, and it had the list of those who had died.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it was a very somber moment as I went through the list. And there were about seven black members of the class at the time. Very, very striking, of course. But I went outside, myself and my wife, Marilyn, we danced, and just had a wonderful night and reconnected with classmates. And I felt so much stronger for having gone there. And then, lo and behold, about 2 months after that, I was in Prospect Park and jogging. I try my best these days to stay in shape even more than when I was younger, I suppose. And I had stopped because someone, one of the joggers had been run over by a bicycle, and there was an ambulance there, and the person was being carried on a stretcher into the ambulance. And I got a cell phone call. It was from my son, who told me that my good buddy Clyde had died suddenly.
And
I was speechless.
Well, your good buddy Clyde is quite a gentleman. His Clyde Murphy.
Clyde Murphy.
An incredibly accomplished lawyer. He at one time was top counsel for the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. He argued before the Supreme Court.
That's right.
Fairly recently, he even won a very famous Supreme Court decision when he alleged discrimination against African Americans who had taken the Chicago firefighter entrance exam. So here's a man who, you know, for all intents and purposes, if you look at him on paper, he was at the top of his game. And how old was he when he died?
He was 62, had just turned 62.
And what happened?
That's right, just turned 62.
How did he die?
And that's what was so stunning about it, that apparently he had visits to the doctor before, but there were no signs, really, that this was coming on. It was a pulmonary embolism, and those things can strike very suddenly, as it did with Clyde. And so it left us in shock. I speak with pity sometimes of myself, but my God, he left his wife and two daughters, one of whom, by the way, Akua, was a member of the class of 2002, Yale.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and a son who was still coping with it, and that was part of the just knocked me to the ground, and of course it has been the cause of lots and lots of reflection, trying to come to terms with this, and it's really what led to over the coming weeks seeping into this. Just a sense, until then, a feeling more so than anything else, that we had been losing members of the class, and really blacks in the classes before us also, the late 60s, really much more quickly than we should have been. And then our class, it was just a matter of counting up the numbers.
Yeah, I mean, in your article, you write about other friends who, other fraternity brothers of yours, including Jeff Palmer, Ron Norwood. I mean, these are people you were very close with for most of your life. So, Ron, when you took stock and were wondering what was going on, you came up with this a theory or idea that this thing called John Henryism was to blame for your close black Yale colleagues dying so prematurely. What is John Henryism?
Well, John Henryism, it's something that I learned myself. I mean, prior to that, really, it was a sense that something was wrong, a knowledge, really, on our part that too many had been dying. But it wasn't until we began to exchange on the internet, we had a listserv really of our own, and folks were joining in and just exchanging ideas about what was going on, but mostly, I suppose, grieving. But it was Charles Finch, who's a physician, and he's now in Atlanta and was a member of the class and also was an Alpha Phi Alpha brother. And he said in a very straightforward way that he thought it was stress and that, in fact, there was a doctor from the late 80s who had been studying stress and its relationship to hypertension and heart disease and death. And he came up with a term, micro-racism. And as I started to talk around with doctors, because I had talked with the Yale Alumni Magazine editors about doing a piece, and they agreed that it was a great and appropriate idea. And I was really just learning and approaching it as a reporter would, because, I mean, I've been a reporter for 35 years. And I learned along the way about John Henryism. And I really felt that when that came up and it was explained to me what it was, that a light bulb had gone off in my mind. And I said, really, this is it. And this is what it explains what's going on here. And in fact, it was... Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, well, the it then is that this the phrase John Henryism comes from the folktale of a man named John Henry. He was an African-American worker who basically he drove steel spikes for the railroad, as the folktale goes. And he wanted to save his job and that of his fellow laborers when a machine, a steam-driven spike driving machine was being introduced. And so he basically, if I understand the folktale correctly, he competed against the drill and drove as many spikes into the ground as he could to prove that he was the best at the job. And he won. But in the folktale, John Henry then dies. So that's where this analogy, if I understand correctly, comes from, that, you know, achieving and proving your worth at all costs, even if it means ultimately your death.
That's absolutely right. And of course, it's the same thing as stress, but it multiplies it a number of times, which is what seems to have been going on in many cases. I had been aware that this was going on from conversations with some of the graduates as I talked with them about other grads they knew who had passed away. And one in particular, who was also a member of Alpha Phi Alpha, Craig Foster, had mentioned he was very sensitive about this, but he did say that he thought that many had been under pressure, often, you know, financial. And he didn't want to refer to anyone specifically, as I, in fact, did not in the article. But in fact, there were clearly stressors going on. I mean, there's stress in life, of course. But it did seem, as I looked at a number of those of us who had passed away, that there were things they were coping with that in the reaction was perhaps quite a bit greater than I suspected other members of the class were going through. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to say, too, that what made this especially heavy for us was the fact that after Clyde passed away in August of last year, we were beginning, to the extent you can make your peace with it, to do so. And then, lo and behold, we heard that Ron Norwood, another member of the class and also an Alpha Phi Alpha brother, was ill with cancer. And he died about 2 months after. And then, as we more and more on the internet and just bonding as never before and reaffirming the sense of fraternity that we had, we were getting together to in Puerto Rico for the wedding of Clyde's son, Jamal. Clyde was supposed to be the best man, by the way. That was the really sad thing about that. So it was a mixture of the happiness, of course, of the occasion, Jamal getting married, and the great, great loss there. But the day I was leaving for Puerto Rico, that Friday, I received an email saying that Jeff Palmer was, in effect, deathly ill, and it mentioned that he had pancreatic cancer. And at first I said, well, why would you say that? You know, and put in the subject line that Jeff, we used to call him JP, was ill, because it seems to me you do that right away. You're sending a message that, well, he's just about gone. Mm-hmm. But in fact, it was pancreatic cancer. And sure enough, in about a week from then, Jeff had died. So that within the space of 6 months, we had these three deaths. And for many, it seemed almost too much to take, I guess, which is why in the article I said, and, you know, it was half in jest, but I guess there is the conspiracy theorist in me, and I think it sort of underlay my journalism in many ways, so you sort of work from there into reality. But I had a couple of times said, well, maybe someone just slipped something into our food when we were at Yale, or perhaps in the months after when we were born in the late 40s.
Well, Ron, if I can just jump in right there. I mean, that's kind of the heart of the issue here is the lifetime of stresses and circumstances which Black men of your generation grew up in. And I want to take that opportunity to sort of throw open the question to our listeners, because we are talking about this thing called John Henryism and the cost of success to your health for Black men in particular, but really for us all. And, you know, and listeners, do the stories of Ron Howell's classmates that you've been hearing, do they sound familiar to you? Have you seen a highly successful African-American man die in the prime of his life from what seemed like stress? Was it John Henryism? And, you know, I'm wondering, what do you think the cost of success is to the health of Black men or to anyone who strives to achieve? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guest is Ron Howell. He's a professor of journalism at Brooklyn College and a member of the Yale class of 1970. He's written an article about that class called Before Their Time. Ron, if you could just stand by, I'd like to introduce another guest into this conversation. He is Dr. Christopher Edwards. He's an associate professor of psychiatry and medicine at Duke University, and he studied John Henryism extensively. Dr. Edwards, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for joining us today. You know, let me just ask you briefly this concept of striving and overcoming obstacles at any and all cost. I mean, is it a real phenomenon, John Henryism, amongst African-American men?
Well, it is a real phenomenon. The interesting part of John Henryism is that it produces negative outcomes when that particular characteristic is placed with inadequate resources. Said another way, a single-minded determination to succeed likely characterizes most successful blacks and whites. Mm-hmm. So it can be a very adaptive and productive personality trait to have. It's only when that particular trait is combined with inadequate resources, whether that's interpersonal resources, spiritual resources, economic resources, or even support at your job, that you get the negative health consequences most associated with John Henryism.
Well, Dr. Edwards, let me ask you about that because Ron Howell, in his reporting, in his piece, actually brought up some very, to my mind, completely counterintuitive study results, in that for African-American men in particular, for example, as they rise on the socioeconomic ladder, they make more money, they seemingly would have more resources, their health outcomes actually oftentimes become worse.
Yeah, but I'd like for you to think about that in a slightly different way. If you work in a low-paying job and someone introduces racist provocation, they call you a name or they say something offensive, your options for reemployment are actually extensive. You immediately walk out of the door, and within 15 to 20 minutes, you are reemployed. When you make high-five, mid-level, six-figure salaries, and someone introduces racist provocation, someone says something offensive, you do a lot of swallowing sometimes. You do a lot of pondering. You do a lot of suppression because you don't walk out of the door and instantly find another six-figure salary.
Mm-hmm.
So the impact of John Henryism, that single-minded determination to succeed, the impact of that single-minded approach to life in the context of under-resource or a lack of resource really is consequential to health.
Ron Howell, another point that you make in your piece, which really struck me, was that men of your generation, the black men of your generation, they were amongst the first to be Yalees, right? And we're talking the mid to late 60s, so the swell of the civil rights generation. And that, that meant, as you pointed out, that your younger years, your teen years, your growing up was completely different. The experience of being a black man was different than it was today. And essentially that maybe, it's death by a thousand stresses, that every time you looked over your shoulder, you were stressed out about something. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because I'm wondering how that plays into, as Dr. Edwards is saying, that the history of being a child of the civil rights generation, or one of the first, and also trying to be a striver, the two types of stresses there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very perceptive. Of course, it was the 1960s. It occurred to me, too, that, of course, the Civil War ended in 1865, which when we were starting out in college in September of 1966, would have seemed like eons ago, and that's the case when you're a young person in your teens and you hear the word century. But in fact, a century is not that far back in time when you think about it. And we were still very much living the after effects of the peculiar institution known as slavery. You also have to consider, and it may be something that's a bit harder for young folks now to take in. It was just a very, very different country demographically. It was a black and white country. And so we came into Yale with that. And, of course, you look back at some of the icons who were our icons at the time, and two who stood out. And it's really kind of interesting and even poetic in a sad way. But I would say, in one sense, even though they were opposed to each other philosophically, I suppose, it was Malcolm X and Jimi Hendrix, mm-hmm. who, in fact, died the year of our graduation in 1970. So there was so much going on at that time, and death was very much in the air. When I was in New Haven, I became very close to a family Huggins family. The mother worked in the library and the father worked at one of the residential colleges. And it turned out that we decided that we might even be related because they were from the island of Nevis in the Caribbean, as was my family. And I got to know them. I spent my first Thanksgiving with them, having dinner, and I was so deeply appreciative. Within a year came the news that their son, who I had never met, but who was just a couple of years older than I, had been shot to death in Los Angeles. He was a Black Panther. He was a member of the Black Panther Party, and he was shot by a member of a group called US. US was a group, United Slaves, they called themselves, and they were headed by a fellow named Ron Karenga, who in fact had come to speak to us Yale students weeks before that shooting. And I could remember that encounter with him there. And, of course, they John Huggins came. They brought the body back to New Haven, and I went to the funeral. And it was pushed into my brain, his death and the sorrow of his parents. And, of course, it was John Huggins' wife, Erica Huggins, surviving after him and staying within the Black Panther Party, who became sort of the unifying personality, as it were, back in the spring of 70 when there was that great, great episode of the May Day demonstrations.
Ron,
when,
if I can just...
Many gathered in New Haven. But death was on our minds in so many ways because of what was going on in the country at the time.
Yeah, and I imagine that not being something that you could escape, that the effects of that had to stay with you. But I'm sorry to have interrupted, but we actually have a ton of people who've called in who want to join this conversation. We're at 1-800-423-8255. It's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's get a couple of them here if we can. Monica is calling from Brighton. You're on the air, Monica.
Hi. I just wanted to actually give an example of what you guys are talking about that is a personal one, that is like, wow, this is very true. My dad died last year in September, and right before his 55th birthday. And he was the battalion chief of Los Angeles City Fire Department. And he had worked his way up, you know, that ladder. He was one of the first captains of the city fire department in L.A. as well. And, you know, I saw him, you know, work his way up. And, you know, he died 1 week before his 57th birthday, and he had an aortic aneurysm.
Wow.
And there was stress, you know, you could see it, you know, on him and in his face and on his body, and it really caused, I think, a low-level kind of depression. You know, he actually planned to retire next year, which I didn't know about. I kind of heard through the grapevine after, you know, he died through his colleagues and everything. But
well, Monica, I'm terribly sorry for your loss. To have your father die when he's only 54 and having been so accomplished, as you said, a battalion chief for the L.A. Fire Department, I want to get Dr. Edwards to respond to your story in just a second here. Thank you so much for your call, Monica. But let me get another call in here while I can. Mimi is calling from Cambridge. You're on the air, Mimi.
Hi, this is Mimi from Cambridge. I think you're on to something. Absolutely, this is an issue, and I can relate it to women who graduated from college in the late 60s and early 70s and then went on to business school at Harvard and Stanford and Tuck and other schools. There were very few women ahead of us. We were the pioneers. And I, for one, have undergone emergency open-heart bypass surgery. And a number of my friends from that era are finding that they are being diagnosed with heart disease at an age that's far too young for this to be happening, and we certainly attribute it to the stress.
Wow, Mimi, thank you so much for your call. Dr. Christopher Edwards at Duke, you not only have studied, as we're hearing from our callers, the very real health effects of all this, the stress and striving, but you've also done some clinical research into how do we treat this. I mean, how do you tell people who want to achieve how to be healthier?
We recognize that intervention really can occur on both sides of the equation, both in terms of helping people set realistic expectations, realistic goals based on the resources that they have available, And secondly, and sometimes most importantly, also assisting them with the resource issue. It is that single-minded determination to succeed in the context of inadequate resources that produces the most negative health outcomes.
Dr. Edwards, I'm sorry to interrupt, but this issue of adjusting expectation based on resources available, to me, that seems, okay, it makes a lot of sense, but it seems also a bit of a thorny issue because, first of all, you're dealing with very driven personalities. And say, in the case of African-American men, I mean, it seems like almost the opposite message that they've been given, you know, especially men of Ron Howell's generation for their life, that you must strive. You must do your best to achieve. And that is the way you will be lifting yourself up out of the situation into which you were born.
Yeah, well, adjusting expectations is not reducing aspirations. It's really two separate issues. And so you can be extraordinarily driven. You can have extraordinarily high expectations for what you do, but approach that in a way that you don't sacrifice your health, that you really are balanced. It's really about moderation. It's about having high goals and striving for achievement in the most aggressive way, but also recognizing that there are things that you have to do to take care of yourself, that at the end of the day, your health is important.
Is it possible to intercede or to minimize the health effects of the stress that, for example, that Ron Howell has been describing to us of a lifetime of stress? I mean, by the time people come to you and say they are high achievers in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, is it almost too late?
Well, it's never too late is the short answer to that particular question. There are many studies that show the very positive and productive impact of stress management on things like glucose metabolism in patients with diabetes, pain in patients with chronic pain disorders. So it's never really too late to address stress management. The key in terms of managing those individuals with high John Henryism is really being balanced. Sometimes people are more susceptible to adjusting their expectations. Others are more susceptible to the resource argument. And so you really have to tailor interventions based on the person's personal preferences as well as their character.
Let's get one last call in here. Maureen's calling from Tiverton, Rhode Island. Welcome to Radio Boston, Maureen.
Hi, good afternoon. I wanted to just comment. I work in the field of obstetrics, and about a year ago I attended a conference where I heard a wonderful speaker, Dr. Lee, who's done work in the area of preterm labor. And black women have a much higher rate of preterm labor than white women. And studies have controlled for socioeconomic class, education, other health factors, and it still stubbornly is higher among African Americans. Which this conversation, you know, and at this particular conference, it really led one to believe that just simply being a black American woman carries with it a higher risk of preterm labor.
Maureen, thank you so much for your call. Ron Howell, we've literally just got a minute to go here. It's been such a fascinating conversation, but I wonder, what kind of response have you received from your article? It sounds like you've been deluged, or you were telling our producer earlier, with a lot of people saying, yeah, I totally know what you're talking about.
Oh, very much so. And it's just been pushing me deeper into it. But I would say into the issue in a very positive way, rebonding, as it were, with so many former classmates. And some I didn't know well at all, but managed to find me through the Brooklyn College, my Brooklyn College address. One thing I thought it was very important to say is that stress is not always bad, that there is good stress. I have a friend who I mentioned in the article, Charles Finch, and I mentioned him moments ago, who's in Atlanta. He has seven children. He's written books on ancient Egyptian history. He was on the faculty of Morehouse Medical School. He organized annual tours to Egypt. I mean, that is stress. But it was something that he wanted to do that made him feel good. And I was always so proud of him, but probably mostly because he was such a good father, as Clyde was. And so I would really, really want to get that across and end with it, that it's important to know yourself and make the right choices, as Doctor was saying.
Well, Ron Howell,
I very much agreed with those comments.
Well, Ron Howell, professor of journalism at Brooklyn College, member of the Yale class of 1970, and author of the alumni magazine, Yale Alumni Magazine article, Before Their Time, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having us very much.
And Dr. Christopher Edwards, associate professor of psychiatry and medicine at Duke University Medical Center, such a pleasure to have you on Radio Boston. Thank you as well.
Thank you so much.
We can always continue this conversation online at radioboston.org. And before we wrap up this segment, a little bit more about John Henry with a particular 1928 classic song. Here's Mississippi John Hurt playing Spike Driver Blues.
But it won't kill me, but it won't kill me, but it won't kill me. This is the hammer that killed John Henry. But it won't kill me, but it won't kill me, ain't gonna kill me.